Good afternoon. My name is Adrienne, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Healthcare IT Collaborative Conference Call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. I would now like to turn the call over to Linda Rouse, Director of Federal Affairs. Ma'am, you may begin your conference.
Thank you, Adrienne, and welcome everyone to the HIT Collaborative Call. Really pleased that you guys are all participating today, and wanted to stress how much we really need your feedback, both on today's call and in answering our survey regarding meaningful use. Hopefully you saw that it went out around 4 o'clock on Saturday, so if you haven't seen it, you might want to check your spam mail, and also we will resend it as a reminder, at the end of this call. It is an anonymous survey, and we need you guys to fill it out and get it back to us by the end of the day tomorrow. And I know that's a quick turnaround, but the meaningful use comments are due on Friday of this week, and so therefore we need your input as soon as possible so that Premier's comments can reflect everybody's sense of the issues on this. And just before I turn it over to Joe Lynch, just to walk you guys through real quick on how we do comments, which is why we really need your input on the survey and feedback from today's call, is that we will get a draft out by hopefully the end of the day tomorrow of our comments that we would then encourage you to use as you see fit and submit your own comments as well. So Premier will be sending comments under Premier's letterhead, and we'll share our draft ahead of time and encourage all of you to put things and use it as much as you want to and insert your own personal hospital system information in comments of your own. Because on this type of stuff in Washington, volume is key, and the more that we can be reiterating and hitting the same points will make a difference. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Joe Lynch to kick off the call.
So I know you all know that on the 16th of June, the work group charged with coming up with a definition for meaningful use for the HIT Policy Committee delivered its draft proposal. That proposal is available on the ONC website. I think it's also available on the Premier website. We are planning on spending most of the time on the call today talking about the proposal and in particular the sense of the HIT Collaborative Steering Committee with respect to the proposal. As Linda said a moment ago, we are very interested in getting your responses to the survey that's been circulated. It's a survey that you ought to be able to complete pretty quickly, and it will focus on some of the issues that I think the steering committee believes are most important in terms of comments back from Premier. So as I say, we're going to be spending most of the call today talking about the meaningful use matrix that the work group circulated. If we have time after we go through the sense of the steering committee and your questions and comments, if we have extra time before the hour is up, we also are prepared to talk a little bit about the hospital-based eligible professional issue. This is an issue that we've discussed in some of the prior calls, and we want to give you a sense of the steering committee's position on that issue and the way that that issue is going to be discussed in the July 8th meeting that Premier has scheduled with the national coordinator. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to the chairman of the steering committee, Bill Spooner. The steering committee had an extensive conversation last Friday discussing the meaningful use matrix, and I think that we've got a pretty good sense of what we want to say in terms of comments to the Office of the National Coordinator on this matrix. But Bill, I'd like to turn it over to you to give the members of the phone on the phone here a sense of where the steering committee is on this.
Good morning. Thank you very much, Joe, for getting us started. I think that my principal comment in terms of the steering committee is that there's a lot of difference of perspective, sort of based upon the uniquenesses of our organizations, et cetera. But I would say that a couple of areas where we did seem to reach consensus when we spoke on Friday, and I don't want to influence those of you who have yet to submit your survey information, but uniformly, the sense is that CPOE is going to be a tough one. Those organizations that are well on their road to CPOE will be able to get there. Organizations that haven't even had the opportunity or the funding to begin the implementation of a modern EMR system will be totally lost, at least in the 2011. And of course, there's the question remains to an individual organization whether they are comfortable waiting to 2012, 2013, because it isn't until after 2013 that you really start sacrificing money. You may delay the receipt, but sacrificing money would start happening after 2013, the way the legislation is laid out. So, you know, very clearly it's going to take some sensitivity on the part of the ONC and CMS in terms of trying to find a satisfactory solution to CPOE. We all know that it's important. We all know that the studies say that it improves patient care. How we can give them some recommendations in terms of how they can find a balanced perspective that will push adoption at the same time not make it impossible is going to be a challenge, and I think that that was kind of our general sense. The survey that we've asked you to submit, for those of you who haven't had a chance to look at it, and I confess, I sometimes look at an email and I don't go through the whole email. The announcement of today's call has the survey link at near the bottom of it. Basically, I'd say please go on and take a look at it. It's asking you for about three simple things with regard to each of the years, 2011, 2013, and 2015, saying what can you get done in that time frame and what's a reasonable percentage compliance of whatever it is in that time frame. What are the things that are in the 2011 preliminary targets that you don't feel are achievable, and tell me what's reasonable. And then lastly, for each one of them, tell me what's too unclear for you to really make a judgment call. So we do want your input, because we really need to be able to win in our remarks with some data that's more than sense, as I've described, but basically reflects some statistics based upon our membership. Here are what the premier member hospitals believe in really some kind of aggregated statistics. I think that's the one thing that I could say that we have spent the most of the time talking about. The other area is really on the indicators. We've heard a lot of input and a lot of discussion around the indicators themselves. And in some cases, it's been, the indicators are too unclear, and before we can really comment on them, we need to know how severe they are. Do you want 30% CPOE adoption, or do you want 100% CPOE adoption, for example? And so without that, it would be really hard to know whether we can get there or not. And when it relates to some of the clinical outcomes indicators, it's even a little bit more unclear, because we really need to know how far the bar is going to be raised, or in some cases perhaps lower, depending upon where an individual organization is. But out of the discussion has come the thought that we have many existing targeted indicators. In my state, in California, we have many indicators that we report on the ambulatory side for pay for performance, for example, all defined by the Integrated Healthcare Association. There's the leapfrog 75% CPOE adoption target. There are JCAHO targets and so forth. And so a lot of conversation around that has been that ONC should try to embrace existing indicators rather than really reinventing the wheel and perhaps putting us into a position where we are reporting multiple indicators, all really which are trying to achieve the same thing, to really make our reporting effort even more complex. So that's really, and Joe, you could comment if I'm missing anything, but I think that was really has really been the essence of the conversation.
Yeah, no, Bill, I think that's a really good summary of the discussion on Friday among the steering committee members. I mean, just to sort of take it from a little bit higher level, the starting point, I think, for the steering committee was a very, very strong desire for Premier's comments to be positive comments that are actually assisting the ONC in coming up with a meaningful use definition that makes sense, as opposed to comments that might be misconstrued as simply being obstructionist. And so the steering committee is very focused on making the comments as positive as possible. And to pick up on a couple of points that Bill made, those of you who have seen this matrix will see that there are many of the measures of meaningful use that are stated by reference to an unspecified percentage. And the survey that we're asking you to complete is asking you, with respect to those measures, to state what percentage you think is achievable in each of the years. And so the steering committee's sense is that probably most of these measures are achievable if the percent is set properly and the year for performance is set properly, and that's a positive feedback to the ONC in terms of what can be done here, and so we really want to emphasize in this survey information what we think is achievable, and then follow by focusing on whether it's achievable within the time frames that are specified. So that was an important part of the discussion among the steering committee members. Also, just to pick up on Bill's last point, the steering committee believes that it is absolutely essential for the quality measures that are included in the matrix to be existing quality measures that hospitals are already reporting on. There's already a very established mechanism by which quality standards are determined. There's no need to set up a parallel process or a parallel set of standards or a competing set of standards, since the existing standards mechanism is so clear. To the extent that the existing standards are modified over time, according to the normal course that they are currently reviewed and updated, they would be incorporated by reference into the meaningful use requirements. But the steering committee feels very strongly that we not be creating something new out of whole cloth. So that, by and large, is the tenor of the comments that the steering committee is currently planning on sharing with the ONC. I want to make clear that everyone knows where the ONC is in the process of coming up with the meaningful use definition. What was presented last Tuesday was the work of the one work group that has been charged with focusing on meaningful use. Any one of you who listened to the policy committee's discussion on this, I think very quickly got the understanding that the full committee prior to Tuesday of last week had not seen this and had not been involved in the development of this matrix. And the discussion that occurred in the meeting last Tuesday was, frankly, all over the lot. There were people on the committee who responded very much along the lines of what Bill summarized and what I've summarized was the position of our steering committee. Conversely, there were a number of people who spoke about the importance of the measures being made more rigorous, and some of the measures from 2015 being moved to 2013, and some of the measures from 2013 being moved to 2011. So So the committee discussion about this matrix really covered a very, very wide spectrum. At the end of the discussion, and it was about a two-hour-long discussion of the matrix, at the end of the discussion, Blumenthal made a comment that I at least took to be a very positive one. He said something to the effect of, well, it's very clear that the committee has a lot of additional information that it wants to see reflected in this matrix and in the meaningful use definition. What is equally clear and just as important, though, is that when we look at all of the information together that we've talked about here today, we have to make sure that the definition of meaningful use is one that is achievable. And from that comment, he then charged the work group to go back to the drawing board to take into account the information that the policy committee had shared in the discussion and to bring a revised product back to the full policy committee for its next meeting to consider how to proceed. He did not say anything about when the policy committee would be expected to come up with a final answer on meaningful use. There's clearly not an enormous amount of time to do that, but it did seem clear to me that he was giving the work group a very strong message that it needed to come up with something that was defensible as being achievable. So on balance, I felt that was very positive. So what we have in front of us now is very much a draft document, and because it's draft and because it's going to be reworked, that's why we want to get as concrete information as possible to the ONC, and that's why the survey is so important. Bill, unless you or I know we have a couple of other steering committee members on the phone as well, and we certainly want to give them an opportunity to weigh in. After that, I think we should open it up for questions from the people on the phone. But before we do that, is there anyone else from the steering committee, or Bill, do you want to weigh in on anything else?
No, I think we've covered it really well, Joe. Just to reemphasize it, and with the apology, it is a short timeline. We do need to get the survey replies in tomorrow so that we can have the reply. We can really craft the reply or the input to the feds on Wednesday to get it out the door by Friday. So apologize for the short timeline, but that's what we were given.
Right. So committee members on the phone want to weigh in? Well, then, operator, if you could instruct the people on the phone as to how they can raise questions.
At this time, I would like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, press star 1 on your telephone keypad. That is star 1 for questions. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Your first question comes from the line of Kevin Jaworski.
Hi. I had a question. When I read the preamble document that went along with the matrix, they were also stating that they were looking for specific stakeholder feedback on how the measures were framed. Could you give any additional insights into what they really mean by framing? Is it baselining? Is it baselining within the organization as you guys are pushing us towards, or is it something different?
Bill, I have a sense of that, but if you want to open up, that's fine. It's up to you. But I saw that comment as well in the introduction, and frankly, I think there's less to that comment than there may seem to be. I don't think that the work group was throwing that comment out with a very detailed sense. I think that it was more generally, hey, do you think that we set up these measures in a way that is understandable and that makes sense in terms of the objectives that they relate to? That was the sense that I got from that comment.
Your next question comes from the line of Karen Barker.
Hi, I was looking at the SurveyMonkey tool and along with listening with your point about looking at some recommended percentages for the measures. Unfortunately, because our physician organization is not live on an electronic medical record, I have no idea what percentage we're at and, you know, how you'd move it. I think it's going to be hard for CIOs to respond to that question. I'm wondering if you've asked, you know, perhaps, you know, another arm of Premier in terms of the clinical group to post on that regarding the clinical measures, because, for example, percent of diabetics with their A1C under control, you know, that an EMR isn't going to make it get under control. It's just going to measure it. So I have no idea whether it should be 25%, 50%, et cetera, which is probably why the committee was ambiguous in putting no percentages in there.
Karen, in my organization, because I suffer from the same labs, I'm not a clinician, and I'm not involved in the detailed quality reporting. I sent the documents out to the leader in our organization who is responsible. Actually, there are two leaders who are responsible, one for our hospitals and one for our physician organization, and asked them to bring back the feedback to me. And I've heard from one of them thus far. And I thought that for my organization, at least worked well so that I could, you know, keep it moving over the next couple of days. You might want to, to talk to whomever in your organization similarly has that responsibility.
Good idea.
And Bill has already said this, but it is worth emphasizing. We know that this is an incredibly short turnaround time frame, and any data that we get back is going to be helpful data. This is not the only bite at the apple that you or we are going to get here. But I think that the committee's sense is that the overarching point to try to convey to the ONC here is not let's throw this all out and start again, but rather let's make sure that the measures are set forth in a way and in a time frame where there is a reasonably good chance they could be achieved. So that's why the survey information will be important. And I guess I should also emphasize that if the survey information comes back in a manner that's completely inconsistent with the way we've looked at this so far, we will respond accordingly.
Your next question comes from the line of Martin Reeder.
Yes, I was wondering if there's been any discussion on the committee's part about measuring partial compliance, or whether they think that it's black and white and you either are able to accommodate all of the measures or you wouldn't qualify for the incentive, or conversely in the later years would be penalized.
There actually was some conversation around that, and I think that's that's a valid input to the process. And you know, we know that some of our regulatory organizations will allow us to choose, you know, which among an assortment of indicators we choose to report. Will the ONC and the CMS allow us to do that? I'm not sure, but that's another valid input.
One of the particular things that makes me ask that question is our hospital's ability to share information through a structure like a RIO, because right now in our market area we don't have that mechanism, and we're a little bit dependent on how the state decides to deploy their funds in establishing that and the timeline that follows.
So there may be some specific comments that you're suggesting regarding interoperability. And some of the indicators are how much of this are you doing, what percentage of CPOE, for instance. Some of them are clinical indicators regarding specific patient care results, and others affect back into the how we're using our systems, and specifically how much interoperability will be required. And you're bringing out the important point that if there's not an HIE serving your area, you're fairly lost in terms of the interoperability on your own.
I think there's
that would be a valid comment.
I think there's a collateral point as well. There are some of these measures, and when you look at this matrix front to back, my impression, at least, was that it seemed to be more heavily weighted to meaningful use by a physician or by a eligible professional, as opposed to meaningful use by a hospital. It's not completely like that, but it just seemed to me to be a little more heavily weighted toward physicians. And the collateral point in that regard is that, to some extent, if this were adopted whole scale, hospitals, at least, their compliance would be dependent on compliance by third parties and eligible professionals in particular. And since the hospitals can't control those third parties, there's a risk element for the hospitals. And I do think a comment along that line is appropriate, and I think it dovetails with your point about the interconnectivity, Bill.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Mark Brookman.
Hi. Regarding the CPOE indicator, what's your take on it? Are they asking about the total percentage of physicians that are ordering electronically, or are they looking more for the percentage of orders that are being entered electronically?
It reads as, well, if you look at the 2011, there is an indicator that says percentage of orders entered directly. It doesn't say percentage of physicians.
Okay, thank you.
Is that the final? Who knows?
And is for the person who raised that question, what's your sense as to the way it's stated versus the alternative way?
Well, I think for our organization, you know, we can get a pretty good percentage of orders, or at least enough to probably meet the requirements, through our ED and hospitalists and stuff like that, which is a smaller group of physicians to focus on rolling out CPOE to, rather than, you know, a wider group of the medical staff.
Right.
Again, if you would like to ask a question, press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Your next question comes from the line of Atos Aguero.
Yes, I wonder if you can help me understand this. Are these guidelines specifically for hospitals, or they are addressing hospitals and physicians? I mean, independent physicians in their physician offices.
It would appear, although it doesn't, in my reading doesn't really say that, it would appear that this is really an accumulation of requirements for hospitals and physicians. And notice that in several places it will say outpatient. Now, I've been in translating that to mean all outpatient, whether hospital outpatient or physician office practice.
If that is the case, then I think Kevin Jaworski had a very good issue when he was talking about framing the results. What you are doing here is putting a hodgepodge of issues of acute care hospitals who have a very different environment and different to control, combining with what independent physicians can do, and they can vary from the independent doc, who could be a geek and can get all the work done, to groups of physicians of 30 or 40 practices who already have things installed in place, to the doctor who may not know anything about technology. Notice that some of the measures are percentage of patients over 50 with annual colorectal cancer screening. We do not have it at the hospital. Okay, that appears to apply specifically to physician offices, because even our outpatient departments, when we have outpatient departments, we cannot control that.
So
So it seems to me that the framing is something that needs to be questioned. Kevin asked that as a first question, and what they are doing is they are framing everything together, and that they need to recognize that the challenges that are being faced and the level of complexity that will take, and even the level of investment that is needed, needs to be stratified. Comments?
Well, that's an excellent point. And you do notice that if you, as you're looking at it, some of the requirements specify as to whether they're inpatient only or outpatient. And in a lot of the early conversation, for example, electronic prescribing appears to be more achievable and having made more progress in the physician's office setting than in the hospital environment. And even a few people have pointed out that the hospital system, that many of the hospital systems today don't even provide the e-prescribing capability comparable to a physician EHR product.
Well, e-prescribing will require full CPOE because the most complex orders to enter will be pharmacy and lab. And if you're going to do pharmacy, doing radiology and doing anything else would be fairly simple. So the fact that they want medication orders included, they just told us get the most complex ordering system available to the doctors with interactions and data order sets and so on. So it's evident that by 2011, they want us to have full CPOE implemented.
Sure. Now, I think the other example around e-prescribing is the hospital emergency room or outpatient department actually transmitting the prescription directly to the outside pharmacy. Some of the hospital products don't do that.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, that's a good point.
Your next question comes from the line of Kip Hubbard.
Hi, this is Skip Hubbard. I'm at Bon Secours. Bill, you had stated the percentage of CPOE, and you said that was percentage of orders, but when I look at the matrix, and I actually have about three different copies, but they're pretty close, it does say percentage of orders entered directly by physicians through CPOE.
Yes.
So I'm really assuming that they're the ones that have to do it, and it's not phoned-in orders or written and somebody else puts them in, but them actually using the systems.
And that becomes really important, Skip, when you look at the target, because we know that there are going to be some phoned-in physician orders, obviously. So they can't make a 100% target.
That's for sure. I mean, we've been on for about a year now at a couple of our hospitals, and we're happy that we're in the high 80s. And these are community-based physicians, so.
Yeah, we're in the same situation.
On the section under health outcomes policy priorities, one of their measures is implemented ability to exchange information with external clinical entity. Are the standards group going to set standards on how we're going to do the exchange on those things? Are you guys aware of that yet?
I have not heard that one. Joe, do you have any?
Yeah, actually, I don't know the answer to that. I don't see how standards can not do that, but I haven't seen anything specific on it.
And if you're aware, the part of the process post-legislation is for each state to designate its entity to lead HIE. In California, I know we've got a big project underway right now to come up with a recommendation, I think, by early August in terms of the state-designated entity that would basically guide the framework for HIE within that state. How that relates to the National Health Information Network and the rules that they're establishing here seems to be unclear at this point.
Okay. Thanks, Bill.
Again, if you would like to ask a question, press star 1 on your telephone keypad. That is star 1 for questions. You have a follow-up question from the line of Karen Barker.
Hi, just looking at the SurveyMonkey tool again. Do you mind if we just do this in Word and email it to somebody? It's a little bit hard to work because there's just a lot of information to put in.
The most important thing is for us to get the information. So if there's an easier way for you to communicate that to us, that it's fine. Linda, yeah, why don't you?
Why don't you go ahead and send it to me? My email is Linda, L-I-N-D-A, _ Rouse, R-O-U-S-E, at premierinc.com.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
Related to that, we definitely are not trying to constrain your answers or the information. We were seeking to do this in a format that was as easy as possible, but it is important to us that you give us whatever information you want to share with us, because we do want our response to the ONC to be as complete as possible. So whatever way it is that's easiest for you to get us that information, and whatever information you want to share with us, we want to take into account.
Again, if you would like to ask a question, press star 1 on your telephone keypad. That is star 1 for questions. And there are no further questions from the phone line.
So is it time that we switch, Joe, to some discussion about the eligible professionals as it relates to hospital-based physicians? You want to
kick
that off?
Yeah. And, Andrea, I think if we go to slide 3 now, and operator, I don't know if you have to switch the lines back onto mute, but if you could do that, that would be great. So in prior calls, we have talked about this issue of hospital-based eligible professionals and the fact that the statute has a very ambiguous definition. The conference language that supports the statute does not clarify who is in that group and who is not in that group. And there are potentially very significant ramifications for how that term is ultimately defined. If that definition for hospital-based eligible professional is too broad, what's going to happen is hospitals that have to incur additional costs with respect to physicians and other eligible professionals on their medical staffs, whether those individuals are employed by the hospital, employed by a hospital affiliate, or not employed at all, but under some kind of independent contractor arrangement, those hospitals are going to have to incur costs, and the EHR incentives to the hospitals themselves won't cover those costs, and the physicians won't be eligible for EHR incentives, and so there's going to be a shortfall. Another potential problem with this is that if the definition is too broad and physicians who are not employed by the hospital are not going to get EHR incentives, inevitably they're going to come looking to the hospitals for financial support for any EHR technology that they feel is essential for their practices. So we've hit on this issue before as one that we think is an important one. There's even now a new dimension to this, and that has to do with the healthcare reform options that are under consideration. As you probably know, at this point, no one knows for sure what healthcare reform is going to look like, although we're going to see it before the end of the year as things now stand. A couple of the proposals that are under consideration are designed to increase the extent of integration between hospitals and physicians. The concept of accountable care organizations, at least to me, looks very much like the Clinton health care plan in terms of putting primary care physicians near the top of the food chain in terms of the money that's coming into the system, and them managing care downstream to include not only care that they provide, but also care that could be provided by other eligible professionals and hospitals. And I know that there are already significant hospital systems around the country that are looking to increase the extent to which they're integrated with physicians and looking more seriously at employing physicians and buying physician practices. And so to the extent that these healthcare reform efforts drive integration, that is going to increase the likelihood that a physician may fall within this definition of hospital-based eligible professional and therefore exacerbate the shortfall between costs and incentives. So this issue is becoming, I think, more complicated, not less complicated. And at this point, the position that the steering committee wants to take is to focus specifically on the evil that the statute appeared to be designed to address, which is double dipping on EHR incentives. And so to avoid the issue of double dipping, to avoid either a hospital or an eligible professional getting EHR incentives while not incurring any EHR costs, the steering committee's proposal to the ONC on this is going to be that if a hospital does incur costs with respect to an eligible professional, regardless of whether that professional has a hospital-based practice and regardless of whether the physician or eligible professional uses the hospital's resources in EHR, if the hospital is incurring costs, and now, by the way, why don't you flip over to slide four, if the hospital is incurring costs, the proposal is that that's an eligible professional who would not fall into the category of hospital-based eligible professional, because if the hospital is incurring costs for that professional that are beyond the costs that the hospital would incur for its own EHR technology, there is no double dipping problem, and therefore the physician or eligible professional should be eligible for EHR incentives. And if the eligible professional himself or herself is not actually incurring costs, it's just the hospital incurring the costs, our proposal is that the hospital should get an automatic assignment of those EHR incentives that the eligible professional qualifies for. We are further proposing that in that case, the hospital automatically be authorized to provide to HHS or CMS any documentation necessary for the eligible professional to qualify for incentives. And the two things that come immediately to mind in terms of thinking about documentation that a hospital might need to provide in order to get an assignment of the physicians or the eligible professional's incentives are, one, there is likely to be some kind of attestation required for an eligible professional to actually qualify for incentives, and two, there is an affirmative requirement for an eligible professional who gets Medicaid incentives to waive his or her right to Medicare incentives. So rather than a hospital find itself in the position of needing to obtain those documents from an eligible professional and not being able to get them, even though the hospital is incurring the additional costs and the eligible professional is not, we're proposing that in a circumstance where the hospital is getting the assignment of the eligible professional's incentives, that the hospital be automatically authorized to submit any documentation necessary to have that eligible professional qualify. And then finally, we think it's important in this circumstance for HHS to clarify that if there is an assignment of EHR incentives from an eligible professional to a hospital, whether it is pursuant to this automatic assignment concept that we're talking about here or otherwise, there should be express clarification that assignment of EHR incentives does not constitute a financial arrangement under the federal Stark law and does not constitute remuneration under the federal anti-kickback law. I know that that is certainly not contemplated by the HITECH Act, but without clarification from HHS with respect to that and CMS with respect to that, that hospitals are going to find themselves in a situation where they are able to take an assignment of EHR incentives, but they are uncertain as to whether that may create risk under the anti-kickback statute or the federal Stark law. So that, in a nutshell, is the position that the steering committee is planning on taking with the ONC with respect to the definition of hospital-based eligible professionals. I want to open it up in a moment here to see what the reaction is among folks on the phone as to whether that is a position that they think is one that would address their own particular circumstances. But before I do that, I want to throw out some suggestions as to what hospitals that have many physicians who might be eligible, have many professionals, rather, on their medical staffs who may fall into this definition of hospital-based eligible professional. I want to throw out some suggestions as to steps that, would be worthwhile taking now in preparation for whatever the final decision is. And if you flip over to slide five now, So first, I think that you've got to actually do some kind of internal survey or audit to see who on the medical staff might fall into this definition. And the statutory definition is simply any physician who provides substantially the full range of his or her professional services in a hospital setting using hospital resources is a hospital-based eligible professional. It doesn't have to be an employed physician. It doesn't have to be a radiologist, pathologist, anesthesiologist, or hospitalist. Is really any physician who provides substantially all of his or her services in the hospital setting. So I think an internal survey to see who might fall into that definition is the first step. And then the second step would be, with respect to anyone that you identify, can you further identify whether you have already incurred costs, EHR-related costs, with respect to everyone on that list, or is it likely that in the future you'll be incurring costs? Our proposal with respect to this is going to be that a hospital can merely attest that it has incurred costs or will incur costs and not specify the amount of those costs or specify on an individual eligible professional basis. It's unclear at this point whether that is going to be adopted, but at a minimum, we're going to have to be able to show that costs have been incurred, and so tracking that now would be helpful in terms of being able to prove that point. So those are steps that I think that you can take now in anticipation of the resolution of this definition. I would like to throw it open. We only have about 10 minutes left here. I would like to throw it open for questions and comments about that position and whether there are any aspects of this issue that you think are not addressed by that proposed solution. So, operator, if you can open it up again for us.
Again, if you would like to ask a question, press star 1 on your telephone keypad. That is star 1 for questions.
And just while we're waiting for that to queue up, I know we have received a couple of other questions on the matrix and we will get to those as well.
You have a question from the line of Karen Barker.
Hi. Unfortunately, I could not connect to the slides. I'm not seeing the questions that you're relating to, but we do have a large physician organization. And I guess I had thought that anybody who wasn't a radiologist, pathologist, et cetera, and actually operated an office-based practice was eligible, regardless of who's paying for the EHR?
Well, the way that the statutory language reads, Karen, is I think it actually does refer to pathologists. It may also refer to anesthesiologists. I can't recall
right.
that, but it's not exclusive. It's not exclusively pathologists, radiologists, anesthesiologists. It says any physician who has a hospital-based practice, who has substantially the full range of his or her services in the hospital using the hospital's assets and the hospital's EHR, falls into the definition. Now, I do think that Congress was merely trying to address a double-dipping problem, where in a case where a physician is using the hospital's EHR and not incurring separate EHR costs, that's what Congress was worried about. But the statutory definition is broader than just RAPs. The commentary in the conference language on the statute says that Congress did not intend it to apply to all physicians providing services in a hospital setting, but there's no clarification as to where the dividing line is.
We have an integrated inpatient and ambulatory EMR, and I guess I was thinking that as long as they are doing Part B billing to Medicare, they would be eligible for up to the $44,000 under Medicare without substantiation of their expenditures for the EMR. But I guess you're saying we do need to separately account for those costs for the ambulatory part of
the
EMR?
Well, I want to be clear about that. The statute does not say anything about eligible professionals needing to account for their costs on the Medicare side with respect to Medicare EHR
right.
incentives.
It sounds like the tricky issue is the case where Karen is describing, where the hospital has acquired a single system to support not only the hospital operations, but perhaps community physicians or employed physicians in a clinic, non-hospital setting, some of the products that have the flexibility to do all of those functions.
And Karen, in your case, yeah, I agree. I think that is the tough case. Karen, in your case, if you wouldn't mind sharing with us, do you know whether the technology either that you have acquired or that you're thinking of acquiring, whether there are incremental costs to provide the capability necessary for physicians to use the hospital's EHR? Are there additional costs that you would not incur otherwise?
Yeah, but we use Cerner. I'll just put that out there. And certainly we did have to pay a separate license fee for their ambulatory EMR module, but it runs on the same hardware. So a lot of the underlying costs are shared between our physician organization and our hospital organization.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, it would be difficult to, you know, tease them apart in a really meaningful way other than on the software side. And quite honestly, I'm glad to hear it's not in the statutes because I didn't think I was going to have to do that, except for the few providers that we have that pediatricians and OBs that really don't have enough Medicare to maximize the incentive. So we were thinking of going the Medicaid route for them.
Right. Well, the situation that you pose is one that would be addressed by Premier's proposed resolution, because you have or you will be incurring costs beyond the cost that you would be incurring just for the hospital's EHR technology needs. By virtue of that, the physicians who access your EHR would not fall into the definition of eligible or a hospital-based eligible professional. They could then qualify for EHR incentives, and then the open question in your case is, who gets those incentives, and are they assigned? And that, in your case, you know, that probably ends up being some kind of discussion between you and your physician organization.
Yeah, we considered that an internal management decision.
Right. So, and I'd be the first to admit that in a lot of circumstances, that's not going to be an easy discussion to have. but the fact that the threshold objective, if you will, of Premier's proposed resolution is to make sure that EHR incentives are not lost due to this definition. Not lost where they shouldn't be. We certainly are not endorsing anyone getting EHR incentives in a true double dipping circumstance, but that's not your circumstance. Your circumstance
right.
is there's no double dipping, and so there should be EHR incentives for those physicians.
Right.
Again, if you would like to ask a question, press star 1 on your telephone keypad. That is star 1 for questions.
Why don't we take the two follow-up questions on the matrix, if we could. Linda, have you got them?
I do. The first question says that the 2013 and 2015 measures are fairly vague, and they're not sure how they can answer the question of how many potentially preventable ER visits will be avoided by 2013, for example. So do we have any guidance or thoughts on that vagueness?
Well, and that is part of the reason we asked the question in the survey that we did. The one that the questioner specifically points to on avoidable ER visits is unmeasurable on any standard, I think. And that is why we asked in the survey, which of these measures do you think are too unclear to even form an assessment as to whether they're measurable? And that clearly is one of them.
And then we had one other question, which I think we've answered, but just for the sake of clarity, since it came up several times, is regarding CPOE. Is the indicator percentage of physicians ordering or the percentage of orders done electronically?
And, Bill, I think your read of that was the percent of orders, right?
Percent of orders is the way that the outline specifies. Percent of orders entered directly by physicians through CPOE.
Right.
And clearly, that could change, there are two guiding statements there. Use CPOE for all order types, including medications, and then the measurement, percent of orders entered directly by physicians. So using CPOE but having nurses do it would be unsatisfactory for the measures.
Right. Operator, do you have any other questions online?
And there are no further questions from the phone line.
Well, then, we're at the end of our time here. We've pitched the survey many times, but I'll do it one more time. We really appreciate you taking the time to fill it out and getting the information to us in any way that is easiest. Linda, could you repeat your email address again for those that are going to email it in?
Sure. If you're going to do it in Word version or something else, my email is Linda, LINDA, _ Rouse, ROUSE, @ premierinc.com. And we will be resending the survey out after this meeting along with where you could get the audio of this call, too. So if you've missed it in your email over the weekend, it'll be coming out again shortly.
Okay, then we'll be in touch with developments, and thanks for your time.
This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.